When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome to the Celtics Lab Podcast, brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network. And if you enjoyed this podcast, check out the How About Them Celtics, First of the Four podcast, and the many other New England sports podcasts available on the CLNS Media Network. Regular season is coming to a close, and the historical comps to some of the best Celtics teams we've ever seen grace the parquet are getting louder and louder and louder. And so what we thought we would do here at the Celtics Lab Podcast is reach back and make some connections to history. After all, we're a bunch of history teachers who moonlight as Celtics podcasters. So hello from Alex, hello from Justin, hello from Cameron, but let's welcome in the person who's going to lead us on this historical journey, Steve Bolpet of Heavy.com, Heavy's own Steve Bolpet. Steve, how are you?
I'm fine. You guys are all teachers?
Justin's a recovering teacher. I teach in Lexington, and Alex...
Former teacher.
Yes. But so, I go back to my college and teach every year, so me molding young minds should scare the living crap out of you.
That's no worse than us doing it. All right. Well, let's mold some minds anyways. Steve, we want to make connections to the teams in the 80s, the teams in the 2000s. But first, let's lay the groundwork a little bit. So Boston is like by far the one seed here in the East. And as of the time of this recording, Monday, it seems like Miami is the most likely team, but that changes basically by the day. So Miami is slightly favored to be the first round matchup for Boston. Philly as well, right there. They're both basically 25%. And then Atlanta and Chicago slightly behind that. So let's just quickly go around the dial on those potential first round matchups, but we're going to save most of the conversation towards the bigger picture. So, Steve, out of that quartet, Miami, Philly, Atlanta, Chicago, if you're Boston, which one is, if anything, like the scariest matchup?
I suppose Philadelphia. I mean, Joel Embiid, and if, Maxie's healthy as well, then, that's the one, I guess, that would concern you, because they're really not – they are not that seed if they're healthy, right? They're up in the 2-3 range, 4 at lowest. I guess that's the only that concern me. But there really shouldn't be anything there that should worry this team. But of that group, that would be perhaps the one that might have a puncher's chance.
I feel like you're biting your tongue a little bit.
What do you mean?
I feel like you're being very polite to Philly.
No, I think Philly's a really good team. I mean, I really do. I just, they've went through a strange year. I wrote a story, I think, last week that, one of the keys was for the Sixers was getting the James Harden cloud to go away. It put the ball in Tyrese Maxey's hands. And although he said he would have been okay if Harden had stayed, I think that was a tongue biting. But no, he wasn't, Tyrese Maxey's not this like me kind of guy. He does look at the larger picture. And I think that bodes well for Philly, going down the line, going forward. I think that's a real good team, and they've got good pieces. And again, they've got Joel Embiid. If healthy, Embiid, is a colossus. And, probably one of the larger X factors for the Celtics, no pun intended, has been Kristaps Porzingis. And although he can certainly draw Embiid away from the basket, the inside stuff he gets will not be so easy you know, with the big dog like Embiid patrolling the yard.
It is going to be interesting. I think there's a pretty decent chance that Philly, given their schedule, actually makes it out of the play-in and climbs up to that six seed spot. There's a chance that they're also at the seven, but I actually think that the models are perhaps a little bit higher on Philly actually being the eight seed than I am. For what it's worth, though, Steve, you know, when Embiid was playing this year, Philly had the second best net rating in the league behind only the Boston Celtics. They were at like really, really good position. Maxey, I think, is a really interesting X factor in all this. You know, this is a guy for whom this would be his second real meaningful playoff minutes, in a much bigger role than before. And to your point about, you know, Maxey not being a me guy and being a team guy, I agree. But I almost wonder if Philly kind of needs him to be a me guy in this circumstance, because, you know, for what it's worth, like, Joel Embiid has never beaten the Boston Celtics in a playoff series. That has not happened in his career. And he's now gone up against them, I want to say, three, maybe four times. And the story of a lot of those series is Embiid, you know, kind of wearing down, putting up big numbers, but in a valiant effort, but also, you know, kind of wearing down, particularly as the series drags on and Horford and others kind of start to lock in and really make things difficult for him. And the one thing that Philly fans have been saying for years is that they just really need a true second scoring option to lift some of that pressure off of Embiid. And Harden, you know, I think I made this point a couple episodes ago, Harden was that guy for two games last year. And I do think that's worth noting. And I do wonder if that, if a big thing for Philly heading into the postseason is going to be like, can Maxey get his own in a way that puts them over the top in some of these games? Because I feel like that's that second scorer is going to matter a lot for them.
Well, the way I looked at saying that Maxey's not a me guy is in the sense that he's going to control the ball. He's going to have the ball in his hands. He needs to. He knows that. But he's going to be looking for teammates, and not just when his stuff isn't there. Harden, you know, you watch James Harden play, and you watch a bunch of people play, and there are assists, and there are kind of assists that aren't quite as nourishing. You know, there are levels to assists, I guess. And ball movement and things like that, and but just understanding what your teammates might need. Yeah, Tyrese Maxey needs to be aggressive, but it doesn't need to be just for himself. He's going to be getting the team into its offense aggressively, and he will get up there and fire up a few shots if it improves tempo and things like that. And you don't have to wonder with Tyrese Maxey whether he's going to want to go to Vegas during the middle of a playoff series. So I think there's a lot of reasons to suggest that Philly could be good. And also, with regard to Maxey's effect on Embiid, it was Harden, it was like an either or thing. The other was going to have the balls and need to go have the ball and need to go make a play. With Maxey, I think he's going to be, you know, looking, make his move aggressively, but if I go right here, will it pull the defender and get Embiid into a better position, into a better spot to receive the ball and do something with it? And I'm not quite sure that ever really crossed James Harden's mind.
All right, let's pause the action and talk about our friends over at Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players, because Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. Prize Picks even has injury insurance, so your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. It's been one of my favorite parts of using Prize Picks and my favorite way to feel safe when I get in on the action and ensure that everything that I'm mulling over for that night's slate of games is ship shape. So download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100.
I like Philly a lot, but just when you look at how they have been injury wise this year, it's hard to count on them. I mean, you know, Embiid's coming back from knee surgery, you know, and remember, minor surgery is what they do to other people.
It's a good line. Yeah, I don't think there's anything that qualifies as minor surgery when you're the most important basketball player on a team. I'm going to try something. I'm going to flip the script a little bit. I'm reflecting on a conversation I had with a student today, and we're talking about the difference between the Cold War politics and the modern era. She's like, well, the Cold War was so easy. And I said, well, it's easy because it's history. We're looking back. We have all these years to decide things. In real time, you have to decide on the fly. Looking back at title runs, say for the 80s teams or the 2000 teams, it was easy to identify what the classic series were because we've had a little bit of time to digest them. So we know who like the best heels were, the best villains, whether it's Isaiah Thomas or Dwight Howard and the Orlando team, right? So let's make some predictions. Steve, knock on wood, I don't know what's going to happen with this team. We'll figure that out later. But let's say the Celtics are going the distance here. Which team in the East is likely to give them like a classic run for their money, if you had to predict? And you could stick with Philly or go elsewhere.
Well, backing up a second, the Cold War was easy because we knew who the enemy was. And now, today in America, we're not sure who the enemy is. You know, you're looking at your neighbors. Okay. Who has a chance to give a classic series? Sure. I guess the obvious one would be Milwaukee, but use a word that I learned in my years working as a bouncer at Irish bars, the Bucks don't seem to have their shite together.
No, they don't.
So, I mean, who knows? But, you know, there's a, you know, the big name thing and all that. Miami, you know, I guess as long as Butler's there and whatnot, and Pat Riley is still in the stands, for nostalgia freaks, there'll be something there. But I guess, you know, it would be kind of fun. It would be and it's probably diminished a little bit with Julius Randle out for the year, but a New York-Boston series, you know, that always, you know, does something, you know, around Boston. You know, like since pre-NBA days when they were fighting for East Coast port supremacy back in the turn of last century. There's a bunch of places where you could find storylines is what I'm saying, I guess.
Sure. Justin, Alex, what do you think? Justin, I'll go to you first.
Honestly, until I see evidence of the contrary, I am going to be more worried about the Heat than I probably should be. Because every year, I convince myself that this year they are older, they are poorer constructed than they were the last time they gave the Celtics a lot of trouble, and now it's looking like we might get them in the first round. And as much as Brain says that it should go how the regular season went, the regular season and postseason with Miami are always different beasts. So I'm actually really curious what you guys think about a potential Miami series. If we do get them in the first round, are you at all worried about that series?
I'm happy to jump in with both for both of those responses for Cam and for Justin. I really like the Knicks call, Steve. I feel like this Knicks team is really good. They are gritty. They're extremely tough. I think super highly of Jalen Brunson and the season that he's had. I mean, I really think he might be the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. And I think, you know, Tom Thibodeau just finds ways to muck these things up and to make life difficult. And I could really see a world in which, even if the Celtics, particularly without Julius Randle out there, have a significant talent advantage, you can kind of just see a way in which, like, Tibbs draws a game plan that puts things into the mud and makes things really slow and exposes Celtics crunch time warts and makes this a really long, difficult series. I could definitely see that happening. As for the Heat question, it's so difficult because, you know, we've seen the Heat do this over and over again, where they, you know, catch fire in the playoffs and then they just kind of ride it out from there. But man, I watched this Heat team like three of their past four games that they played, and they just did not look very good at all. Like, outside of Jimmy Butler up faking his way into free throws, the offense was super inconsistent. There were a ton of times where it felt like they didn't really know what they were doing. And it's like Terry Rozier has to hit a bailout shot at the end of the shot clock. Bam Adebayo has, I think, had a really good season. I just don't really trust his offense in a postseason context. I never have. And I get the sense that, you know, in previous iterations of this matchup, one of the things that Bam was really able to feast on was Al Horford breaking down and Robert Williams being injured. The Celtics front line is better this year by, I think, a pretty significant margin. To me, they feel dangerously reliant on Jimmy Butler getting calls. And if he's not getting calls, I'm not sure I see a path for this team.
I think, and I want to start making historical comps, but I don't know. I think there's something about this Orlando Magic team that gives me pause. They've been in the top five in defense all season long, and who knows how they're going to call these games. I mean, they've fundamentally changed how they are allowing guys to play on defense in the second half of the season. And if you ask Joe Mazzulla, he loves it. He loves that things are getting gritty and physical. But the Magic are so long. And I could just see a world where they punk the Celtics in a game or two. I could also see a world where, you know, it's their first rodeo and it's too big. But so I don't know about classic, just because you kind of need, Steve, to your point, the names, the history, the villains on the sideline. I don't know if that there's that much pop to a Magic Celtics series, at least this first time around. But I wouldn't want to catch them early on because I think that they could just like use their speed and physicality to make things more difficult than you would want. But we still have a few more weeks that we don't want to, I mean, we got a podcast next week too. So let's save that for next week. Instead, Steve, let's turn back the dial a little bit.
Well, just on this thing here, I mean, for a second, if I may.
Sure.
Miami's interesting because they always seem to come up with something weird. But what I found kind of strange, was the Celtics had a couple of big leads that they've blown in the last few weeks, right? And people are all over them and all over Joe Mazzulla. Didn't Miami blow like a 21-point lead? Not that I looked really hard, but I didn't hear anyone calling for Eric Spoelstra's job. He was still a genius. Again, shite happens. I think – or the Orlando issue is really good because that's a team where it could go one of two ways. The moment could be too large for them.
Yeah.
But I think more in the other direction. I think they would go into any playoff series against a higher seed thinking, hey, we're playing with house money. And when you have a team that's aggressive to start with all the pressure removed from its shoulders, playing with house money, and all of a sudden, the team that's supposed to run them out gets a little bit nervous about it. We all talk about the 2008 Celtics and how great they were, but they went seven games in the first round against Atlanta, which finished 28 games behind them in the standings. You know, so, and, you know, New York, that's another story entirely. I go way back with Tom Thibodeau. We played summer league basketball together. There's a whole bunch of stuff there, but it'd be interesting. Put it that way, there, it'd be a really interesting series from a number of different standpoints.
Yeah, I like Orlando. Also, I love the team that's like even too young to know that the lights are very bright. Like they're that naive that they don't even have a recognition of the moment. But you set up the segue so well, so let's do it. Looking back again, history. Is easy because it already happened, so you can figure out what went wrong or what didn't. But
like economists, they get nothing right in real time. But
Looking back, it was, yeah. Well, I also teach economics, and I feel that very much. I wasn't covering the team in 2008, but I know that, you know, it was on talk radio, on the television. Are they going to be able to put these pieces together? Are they going to be able to put their egos aside? Blah, 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 blah. And so looking back, it was like, oh, of course the 2018 won the title. But in reality, I suspect the coverage was kind of consistent with what we're seeing in this Celtics team. Can they do it? Can the coach figure it out? Can the personalities mesh? So Steve, take us back to 2008. Like, what, as someone covering the team, what did you find yourself having to talk about? What did you find yourself interested in? And then what are the connections that you can make to this team, and what are the differences?
Well, the first thing it reminds me of is being in Rome, and Glenn Davis, Big Baby, got hit by a car, one of those little cars you see in the European cities. And the immediate concern was for the car. look, that team, the issue of can these three guys play together seemed to be solved pretty early on. Those guys met in Rome. They talked before then. And everything coming out of them was, yeah, at this stage of our careers, we can do this. We can set aside the other stuff that maybe had driven them in earlier points of their career. So they said that. And sure, you've got to wait to see if it happens in real life. But when it did early on and kept doing so early on, you saw that there would be the sacrifices, that they did have their the roles of how this was going to play out. They kind of got set pretty early on, and Ray Allen was the one that probably sacrificed, quote unquote, the most. And they let, you know, Paul be Paul for the most part. Garnett was, you know, all this stuff, and really pushing them in practice as much as anybody. You know, Garnett's the way he approached practices. And then they had a guy like Rondo who was, you know, kind of a savant. And what's funny is I always go back to this. Perhaps the key move of that year, for that year, in addition, obviously, to the deals for Ray Allen and Garnett, was that Doc Rivers really wanted a veteran point guard. Mm-hmm. And Danny Ainge said, yeah, I'm working on it for you. I'm working on it. And he didn't really, because he wanted Rondo to play. He did end up getting him Sam Cassell later on in the year, but by then, Rondo had already established that he was going to be the starting point guard. And, you know, Danny was, as much as highly as Rajon Rondo thought of himself, that, you know, second to that only was Danny Ainge. I remember during Summer League, Celtics were practicing out at some high school in Nevada. And Ainge kind of sidled over me because I have something I got to tell you. And people think that Ainge told me a bunch of stuff. No, not true. But I let people think that because it bothered them. And in a competitive newspaper situation, that was a good thing. But Ainge comes over and says, I got to talk to you. I'm thinking, finally, this guy I've known since I started covering team is going to finally give me something. And he gets over there and I'm like, I'm ready. And Ainge goes, Rondo's really good. So you could just see that he was, you know, excited for this kid. But again, that team had its stuff in line with they were very good players at the right time in their careers. And that was the fit.
So then let's say, you know, the Celtics face a team like the Magic or the Hawks in the first round, and suddenly they're down a 2-0 deficit, or it goes 6 or 7 games. What do you think made things so difficult for Boston in 2008 against Atlanta in that first round series? And like, what could this Celtics team learn from that?
Well, again, you had the Hawks playing with house money. You know, they weren't expected. And let's be honest as well. The Hawks finished, again, I believe it was 28 games behind the Celtics. But the team that the Celtics faced in the playoffs wasn't quite that team because they picked up Mike Bibby.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Bibby, during that series, he came out and called the Celtics front runners and just caught a lot of abuse and a lot of heat. And I remember going to Bibby one day just privately and saying, you did that on purpose to get the pressure off the guys around you to take it on yourself. He goes like, shh, you know. they were a better team than that far away from the Celtics once they picked up Mike Bibby and had that kind of veteran that they could put with their younger guys.
I have a question that's somewhat related to that about the current team. Earlier in his career, Jaylen Brown had a conversation with Danny Ainge about the greatness of a prior iteration of the Celtics ball club, and it was obviously laughably distant from the reality that Jaylen thought the team was at the time. But now we're hearing that this team is breaking this record and that record and historic this and historic that, like, constantly. And from your perspective, is this more like, you know, like a MVP hype machine, or is this really a historic ball club in what you have seen so far?
Well, a couple things. Number one, in terms of point differential and like that, they've benefited from a couple of real big blowouts, right? And why I think it's really hard to compare, certainly with the way back Celtics teams, but even as recently as like 2008, is that there's a lot more reliance on the three, and that really can give you serious mood swings within a game and on the final score. So, it's hard to draw direct parallels. But then also let's look at the way the Celtics have really distanced themselves in the East. You know, look at each team behind them and look at the issues those teams have had. While the Celtics have been relatively damn lucky physically, injury-wise, during the year, right? And even when they have had a guy out, it's helped another guy off the bench get more minutes and establish themselves and build their confidence. So Milwaukee, you're making the huge change. And let's, you know, as good as that trade could end up being for the Bucks offensively, you knew that was a killer defensively for them. And then there is the corollary to that where, you know, does Milwaukee make that trade for Damian Lillard if it knows that because of that trade, Drew Holiday is going to wind up in Boston? Like, you know, whoa.
I can't imagine. I'm glad you said that. I feel like there should be more attention drawn to how much Milwaukee shot itself in the foot with that one.
Yeah, I remember writing about that earlier in the year, and the quotes from, you know, unfortunately, when you're dealing with something that sensitive, where someone doesn't want to get, you know, a colleague or maybe even a friend who's a colleague pissed at them, you know, they were unnamed quotes, but they were like, you know, how could they have been so dumb as to not look at the chessboard, you know, one move down the line here. Yeah, Milwaukee's had issues, and they've had injuries again. Look, Milwaukee they're going to have defensive issues, especially in the playoffs with Damian Lillard, granted. But Milwaukee, if healthy, with Chris Middleton being himself, you know, that's not really a bad team. And maybe they get it together when it's like they're not in regular season mode saying, we've got to get ourselves and find our groove. When it's playoff time, it's like, we have to win tonight's game. And maybe they dig in a little bit more on defense. Maybe they, you know, look, one of my basic tenets of when you're describing or deciding what can happen in a playoff series or in a game. Is a team good enough to make it a two-minute game? Milwaukee is. And are they then good enough to win any two-minute game? Absolutely. When you've got Giannis and Damian Lillard, you know, aside from their corollary stuff. You know, so yeah, they've had their issues this year, and that's helped create the distance and made the Celtics numbers look even brighter. The Knicks have had issues. The Cavaliers started off horribly, and it looked like it was dead out there. The things people were saying about them were incredible, but they've had issues as well, injury wise, Mitchell, et cetera. But every team you can look at and say, okay, well, in Philadelphia. So that's kind of contributed to where Boston's numbers look. You see Boston against some of the Western Conference teams, and, you know, you see how were they playing those guys more regularly, that their numbers might not be as historic.
Yeah. The East is particularly bad this year. I mean, I think that's something we knew and has just become more clear as the season.
I'm not sure it's bad. I think it's kind of like on, like, to be determined. You know, if you were going to grade the East because of their situations and their circumstances, you'd probably be giving out a whole lot of incompletes.
Oh, unless for sure.
Those really jerk markers that, you know, just screws people up.
No, I always like kids turn in late work. I mean, I guess it just allows for junk data. When we look at all of these historical comps, I mean, yeah, you're comparing eras, but the Celtics going up against that Detroit Pistons team or that Wizards team, to say nothing of a very injured Cleveland team or a very injured Knicks team, it just kind of inflates the data and makes it wonky. I guess, Steve, maybe another way of asking Justin's question. So I think it was you, maybe not. And the Celtics... last year, you said the only team beating them is themselves. And I guess other than Denver, I sort of assume that holds right now. Is if Boston doesn't, you know, end up raising a banner, it's something they did rather than, but maybe. So, Steve, I guess this is a two-parter now. Do you agree with that premise? But then second, did you feel that way about teams in the 80s or in the 2000s?
As far as now, I would say, yeah, in the Celtics would still, I think, have an edge over whoever they play. In any series they're in this year, they should be favored. Maybe that's a little bit of a stretch when you get to Denver, because they just, even though they've had to replace some people, move some pieces, that team just really knows who it is as well as any team perhaps that I've ever seen. Like, you know, we know our identity. We know who we are individually and how we need to play in whatever we're, you know, how we need to do what we do. And there's guys comfortable in those roles. I think a healthy Clippers team, will that ever be? A healthy Clippers team can scare a lot of people. And as much as they've really looked like hell for stretches of the year, the Lakers are one of the classics. You know, can they make it a two-minute game, and then do they have enough to win a two-minute game kind of teams? And I think I'm you know, Phoenix should be there. We kind of expected that, but again, they've had their injury issues. You know, you only need to get it together for a short, well, you know, for a couple of months here to make some serious noise, right?
Yeah. All right. So what about in the past? Do you ever like in what ways are you confident in this Celtics team that looks something like how you felt in the past?
Well, you know, look, it's they should, but the fact they should be, you know, they should have last year. They should have. 2021 was kind of a weird year. Mm-hmm. The finals against Golden State, 2018, 2019, those were teams that should have. But the fact that they didn't, and the stars that have emerged and are still here, the fact that those guys haven't been a part of a team that's got it done, that's gotten it done, should, I guess, give you pause, or at least make you wonder. But it's, put it this way here, it's in their hands. And yeah, if you're a team and you go into any playoff series or any situation and you say, well, you know, we're the ones that are going to have the greatest say in deciding this, that should be a really comfortable place to be. You know, like, hey, we're not having to hope that something on the other side screws up. You know, we have the ability to make things happen ourselves. I mean, how many of us in life have that kind of self-determinance, you know, have that kind of power? And they do. So, but again, the fact that they haven't is what's going to give people, you know, I don't think it's fair to jump all over them when they screw up a game here or there, but I do think that this team, by the way it's happened, things have happened before, has kind of earned that slight doubt. Having said that, this is a different team than last year, you know? Mm-hmm. So it should stand on its own merits and not be, you know, it's like the Red Sox in 84 were still, you know, hearing about the sins of the teams in the 70s and 80s. No, this is its own team, and it should, by all accounts, be much better equipped to deal with playoff vagaries than teams, even recent ones of even recent Celtics teams.
I guess to that end, the 80s teams, like the 85, 86 teams, feel so inevitable looking back. And they had, you know, the shine of the 70s teams and the early 80s teams. I don't really think about that 85, 86, 87 stretch where they were just, you know, untouchable. Did it feel that inevitable in the moment?
The only team in that, you just mentioned those 3 years, 85, 86, 87, the only team that there felt there's seemed to be any sense of inevitability was really 86. Mm-hmm. Because 84, they'd won, I think people realized they beat a better Lakers team, which rarely happens in the NBA. It's in over seven games, best team usually wins. But I think people recognize then that the Celtics, by, you know, physicaling up the series, the Kevin McHale clothesline on Kurt Rambis, all those things, getting inside the Lakers' heads, clearly, they'd won that year. 85, the Lakers, they go up. One of the most amazing things, and I wasn't on the beat then, I was working at a local paper. 85, the Celtics go out and win game one of the finals, right? The Memorial Day Massacre, 34 points. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Magic Johnson win the series in the dressing room after game one, because that was a tight-ass team. And, you know, Kareem looked like he was, you know, facing an interrogation, you know, like there was a bright light on him. Where were you on the night in question? Or in that case, afternoon. And these guys were so tight, and Worthy was, they were all getting defensive. Magic took his time, comes out of the shower, sits and answers all the questions. Hey, it's one game. Would you have been happier if we'd have lost by three? You know, et cetera, et cetera. Took the pressure off those guys. And that was a year that the Celtics really might have overplayed their starters a little bit, and they were really gassed by the end of it. 87, that was Kevin McHale playing on a broken foot. Yeah. So as inevitable as 86 felt, there was, you know, they picked up Walton and all that, and things were really rolling for that year. There was still, I think, a bit of a small bit of unfulfillment because they didn't get to play the Lakers in the finals. It was Houston, and I remember the Celtics had wrapped up the conference finals quickly, and I had to go out. I flew out to LA the day before game five. And the Lakers were down 3-1. It's like, okay, they're going to win game five. Mm-hmm. They're going to send the series back to Houston, and then we'll see what happens. And that was the game that I remember that was a late starting game, even for West Coast time. And that was the game where Ralph Sampson hits the twisting shot on the inbounds pass, and the Lakers are gone. And all the year, the whole year, the Boston and LA are both their cities, their fan bases, the teams even were looking forward to a rematch. And when it didn't happen, it was like, oh, it was crazy. So as much as that was the inevitability here, but in that sense, it was only inevitable that they were going to get to the finals, it seemed. Sure. Winning the finals, they still going to have to go through the Lakers, they thought. And remember, I mean, not that the Rockets were bad or anything, but the Celtics should have, been stronger perhaps in that series. The fact that it went six games could possibly be chalked up a little bit to the Celts being like, a little bit of a letdown that it wasn't against the Lakers, and they had to go against the, Sampson and Olajuwon, and they'd beaten them in 81, and 5 years later they play and one guy was Bobby Joe Reed in 81, and now he's Robert Reed in 86. We had a pretty good discussion over that in LA, figuring that the series was going to go longer. But yeah, it was an interesting year in a lot of ways.
I mean, among many other things, it occurs to me how lucky people who cover the Celtics are. I remember last year talking to Philly media and them saying, like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've never been to a conference finals. And if you've been covering the Celtics for even a few years, you've covered a bunch of conference finals, to say nothing if you've been doing it for a while. All right, let's do this. History aside, let's look forward again. And I feel like we've been a little heady and a little analytical. Let's be fun. Steve, I'll go to you last so you can think, and because you're the guest. But Alex and Justin, I'll go to you first. What is just like a player or a storyline in this postseason around the NBA that you're really looking forward to? And I'll set an example. I'm looking forward to Tyrese Maxey. He's arrived. He just scored 52 points. I think for a few years, he didn't understand how fast he was with the basketball. And sometimes he would like get in position and be like, oh, I'm here now. I don't know what to do. And I feel like he knows how to use his speed better. So I'm just excited to see what Tyrese Maxey can do as like a bona fide stud in the postseason. So just because hoops is fun, that's my pick. Alex, what about you?
I am going to go with something that I was actually hoping to mention earlier when we were talking about potential Western Conference opponents, because for some reason, this team has been going under the radar, even though they've been in contention for the one seed basically all year, and they're getting healthy at the right time, if Adrian Wojnarowski is to be believed. The Minnesota Timberwolves are on the precipice of having their best regular season in franchise history. Anthony Edwards has quietly been playing out of his mind for basically the whole year, to the point where I don't think you can ignore him as a true top 20 guy going forward, maybe even top 15. He's been that good. They're getting healthy at the right time. They're also fielding a historically great defense in the midst of all of this. Rudy Gobert is a lock, I believe, at this point to win his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award. Chris Finch has crafted a system that really emphasizes their length and size. Naz Reid is in the running for Sixth Man of the Year, and I think would be a worthy candidate to win it. And I am really, really interested to see if this team is ready for some serious playoff chops. Last year and in previous years, they've flamed out against the Grizzlies. They haven't made the playoffs, and there have been kind of disappointing iterations of this team here and there. But this version of the Timberwolves feels genuinely ferocious. And to me, at least, if there is a team in the West that can actually give Denver a series, I think it's this one.
All right. Dr. Quinn, same question. And also say whatever you want to say about the UConn Huskies.
Okay. So just to clarify, this is anything in the playoffs, not necessarily just the Celtics. It could be
Yeah. So it can be anyone. It can be Celtics, I guess. I don't care.
Okay. Well, in that case, I do want to say that Al Horford has quieted down a little bit fairly recently. And I think that he is very quietly doing the thing he does every year, usually from December, but he seems to be doing it again. And I'm looking forward to seeing what is probably Al's last best push for a title on his resume. I know it's really important to him, even though he doesn't talk about it. And I'm really excited to see him turn back the clock in ways which I expect a slightly lighter level of effort through the last months of the season is going to give him.
Cool. And do you want to say anything about UConn?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
As far as UConn goes, the only thing I want to say, if you are a fan of Kentucky, you better pin your hopes on Billy Donovan. That's all I have to say.
Oh, interesting.
Pin your hopes on
Billy Donovan.
Oh, okay.
That's the best shot they have of a coach they can pry away from another situation. Who has said that he wants to coach an Ivy League school if he ever does return to the college ranks. I don't see a lot of people leaving the NBA to go coach at the college level, but I mean, it's Kentucky, and I think he was an assistant there before under Pitino, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that that's probably their best shot. Not that I'm advocating for Kentucky to do anything as a UConn fan, but.
College basketball is in a really strange place, by the way. I'm involved still with my school, the University of Dayton, which belongs in the Big East, by the way.
You've been consistent on that.
This conference is soon to be biggest, I bet.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's hard. It's hard. Well, there's a bunch of reasons. But anyway, Catholic school, it fits all the. But college basketball is really strange right now with NIL. Dayton's got a guy this year that. Is making almost more than Butler's team.
Wow, that's a good stat.
But there's a lot of stuff, and how that's going to factor out in the transfer portal. And I think it's almost crazy for a guy to go to coach and be a head coach in college basketball now. It's just it's nuts. Nuts.
I saw someone on Twitter said. After the Calipari news broke that the transfer portal is out of control, which I thought was pretty slick.
Yeah.
All right. So Steve, back to the professionals.
Yeah. There's a bunch of people I'm looking at. But one kind of, I guess, under the radar I've had this conversation a bunch during the year with coaches and scouts. I really hope that the Clippers are healthy. Particularly Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. I think it bugs me that people have forgotten how good Kawhi Leonard is. I mean, he's going to, if he's again healthy, pretty, there's almost every playoff series he goes into, with maybe the exception of Denver, he's going to be the best player. And I fully respect the Anthony Edwards things and all that stuff, but being spectacular and being really freaking good can sometimes be two different things. And I think and as we know, the playoffs become more of a possession game. I would really love to see Kawhi Leonard have a good playoff run and just remind a lot of people how freaking good he is.
I'm nodding emphatically because I said something similar last week. I agree with you entirely. That series he had against the Suns last year, the year before, was just proof positive. I mean, Kawhi Leonard kicks so much ass when he plays, but he usually doesn't play super healthy. And on that note, get well soon, Kawhi Leonard. Steve Volpet of Heavy.com, Heavy Sports. Thanks again for coming to the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm cutting us off because we could have otherwise done like 2 hours on historical comps to this team. It's so fascinating. And it's also fascinating talking again to my students who they've never seen a Celtics team win a championship. So their like perspective and their expectations are both limited in a weird way. But for another day. And instead, I'd like to tell.
Remember all the years though, after Bird left, and there was a real stretch in there where this team was awful.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure there's certainly a class of Celtics fans who, like, their fandom and, like, enthusiasm and pessimism are all born out of that 90s, early 2000s stretch.
I'll tell you, I'll slip in one quick story. The Celtics, remember the year they went, was it 15-67? The really bad year.
Like in 2006?
No, it was earlier. I believe it was earlier. Anyway.
Okay, yeah.
Well, it could have been right around then. Anyway, so the Celtics, their locker room used to be a little bit different, but they would meet in the hallway before the game, and then get in a little bit of huddle, players only, and then go out on the floor. And I was stuck in that hallway a few feet away. I was talking to someone, and all of a sudden the team comes out, and it's like I'm stuck there. I've got to, like, kind of hide in the thing. They put their hands in. It's usually like they put their hands in, and someone will say, okay, let's go do this. One, two, three, Celtics, and I'll run out. On this night, before the last game of the year, they put their hands in. There was an awkward silence for a moment, and a voice, which Rick Fox later confirmed to me was him, pipes in with, let's get this fucking thing over with. And that was the rah-rah motivation for that evening of Celtic basketball.
Like I said, hold this team to a high standard, but don't take anything for granted, Celtics fans, because it's not fun to root for a team that wants to get this fucking over with, and it's certainly not fun to podcast or write about it. And on that note, I'd like to tell people that this episode of the Celtics Podcast was brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network. And if you enjoyed this podcast, check out the How About Them Celtics, the First to the Floor podcast, and the many other New England sports podcasts available on the CLNS Media Network. Mr. Bullpet, you're the best to do it. Thanks so much for coming by. And
thank you for grading the curve.
Yeah, I always do. Alex, thanks for playing bass for Divine Sweater, the band that you heard at the top of this podcast. Justin Quinn, while I'm giving out thanks for editing my copy. There were a lot of errors this time around. And everyone else, thanks for listening. Like and subscribe if you haven't. And we'll catch you next week. Adios.